Welcome to the Creative Shift Podcast. My name is Dan Blank, founder of WeGrowMedia.com, author of the book Be the Gateway. So I'm really excited to share my interview with author and illustrator Aura Lewis. So this is such a big conversation because we talk about really her transition from one career into being a full-time illustrator and author. And we hit upon a lot of the questions and challenges that so many writers and creative people that I speak to address, which is, how do you know when to make a shift? How do you navigate that? How do you find opportunity? So what she shares is how she made one career transition and then made another career transition and kind of how she navigated that. And I think that this is something that when you hear it from other people, it always sounds inspiring. But when you do it yourself, it feels harrowing. And I really appreciate the honesty with which she kind of took us through that. And we get to that oddly more at the end of our conversation. So please stick with it. She talks about how she came up with the concept for her first book, how she got an agent, how she got a book deal, and how she then went through that process, then getting multiple other book deals. She has a lot of things coming up. She talks with honesty about her, again, another thing I hear from a lot of writers and artists, her feelings on social media and her, you know, thing that a lot of people have, which is a hesitancy of putting themselves out there. This was such a wonderful conversation. Her story is really inspiring. And what I love so much about it is that she kept hitting on these themes that again and again, I know that people struggle with each and every day. So enjoy the conversation. Hey everyone, this is Dan Blank, and I'm very excited to be chatting with author, illustrator, Aura Lewis. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
So I feel like we've connected a whole bunch in social media, just in little ways over the last, I don't know, I'll say a couple years. I don't know exactly how long. And it's funny because this is something I think a lot about, which is as an audience member, someone who sees you as an illustrator, as an author, there's only so much I get to see. And then you emailed me and you'd mentioned kind of your story. And you had this line up front, which is really, I mean, really a big deal, which is, you know, in addition to the other books you have out, in the last year, I got 6 additional book deals. And to me, that is one of these things that we're going to really spend a lot of time taking apart. But that's one of those moments where everyone listening is going to lean in and be like, wait, how do you do that? And of course, to you, it's one of those things where the answer to how you do that and how you navigate that is probably literally the story of your entire lifetime. So I'm not sure where to start with that. I guess we can start with the present and then work backwards a bit. But so you have a new book coming out, and this is your second published book. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
So I guess the first thing is, how do you feel the second book is different than the first in terms of the process of creating it, the process of publishing it, or really anything about how you feel that it's evolved or how you've grown with that?
Yeah. So, a lot to talk about, but it's very different. In some ways, it's similar because it deals with the general topic of feminism. My first book is a picture book for children about Gloria Steinem. So it was the first picture book biography about her. And my second book, the upcoming book, is called The Illustrated Feminist. And it's about American feminism. And it's in honor of the 100 years for the for women getting the right to vote in coming up in 2020. And so, but that is a book essentially for adults. So it's actually quite different, you know, from a picture book to sort of like an adult illustrated handbook, which is, you know, I think almost 200 pages, if not more. A ton of research went into that. You know, a lot of research went into my Gloria book as well, obviously, but yeah, it was very different. My Gloria book also sort of was, I didn't have to make a whole lot of changes to it. I submitted it almost like completely formed. The text had very little edits. The illustration had very little edits. You know, I basically had to do a cover and like a few other things, but it was sort of good to go, which is kind of crazy. The reason it was like that, it was because I worked on it as part of my master's degree. And so it was really sort of like a project that I worked on a lot in my master's, and it was published, you know, very soon, during my master's program. And then The Illustrated Feminist, I worked on, it was acquired on a proposal. So it was about a third done. And then I spent basically the last 2 years completing it. And so it was much, much more work, much more research, much more writing, much more. It essentially has, like, you know, over 100 illustrations, a ton of text. Yeah. So it's
all right, there's a
very,
lot.
Very different kind of a book.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I guess we'll start with the obvious question, which is getting that first book deal. So you're getting your master's and you're doing this project. At what point did you say, hey, my little project here should be a published work out for the universe? At what point did you have that idea?
So it was like our first year project, and every year they have like what's called the book show. And they sort of just say, it's a book show, make a book, do whatever you want. And back then I was very like sort of just being introduced to children's books. I mean, I say introduced, not obviously introduced, but as a maker, you know, like to the whole field and industry is more like it to say. And I was just like enamored, and I decided I'm going to make a children's picture book. And I decided I wanted to be as close to like a real book as I can. And when I had the idea to make a picture book about Gloria Steinem, it was sort of like this like lightning bulb moment. You know, this was back in 2016. It's hard to imagine it now, but it was right before the elections. And so today, like, there's much more, like, there's this whole like rebirth of feminism almost. Back then it was, you know, in New York, everyone was, I don't want to get into politics, but it was just like a different place. And so it was right before all the books came out. You know what I mean? Like now it's like the market is like full of these feminist books, but literally back then there was none of those. And so I had this idea to do it. And I was so excited by it. I just spent like a ton of time on it. And I made a complete book, and I didn't know if this was going to be a book, but I knew it was good enough to like show people.
So when you say you spent a ton of time on it, this is the thing I always like about the creative process, which is, what does that look like in terms of hours or time of day or what you did? And I mean, I guess that's the question. Yeah, it's sort of like, because the way you're describing it, it sounds like one of those moments where someone gets obsessed with a project and they're burning the midnight oil and they're putting in way more time than other people, not to disparage them, but just there's something has taken hold of you. Like, what did that look like?
Right. Yeah. So it, you know, it was basically like me like listening to Gloria Steinem's like interviews, like on a loop, just like listening to anything she said on YouTube, reading her like books about her, books that she wrote. So just immersing myself in her world, you know, looking at like all the pictures of her and of that time period, which was just so much fun. I love that, you know, I was focusing on the 60s and 70s, sort of like when she, you know, really became big and started Miss Magazine and all that. So it was just sort of like immersing myself in that world. And then sort of, I really didn't know what I was doing at first. I just started to draw her. And just, you know, it was a process of just reiteration until like I figured out like how I can make a children's book about this character. You know, at first I was really like, you know, I was sure I needed to like make it like very historically, like that everything look exactly like her, very historically accurate. And yeah, I felt like it wasn't right. It wasn't kid friendly enough. It was too this, it was too that. I consulted with like editors.
That's a big moment. What is, cause like we've all been there where we have this idea and then you're obsessively, right. It's like a word I like to use, but you're passionately like exploring it and you're inspired and you're putting ideas out there and some feels right. But then a lot of people get stuck because they're like, well, I've done 9 versions. I kept evolving, but I don't know anymore. How did you seek out any kind of feedback before you presented it? So if you talk to editors, who was that? Or how did you even think about who you could show something to get feedback from?
Yeah, so really good question. So, okay, so I was trying to work on this manuscript and illustrating at the same time. And to be honest, I was feeling a little bit frustrated because the program, which is a great program that I did, the master's in illustration, didn't really offer the support I was looking for in terms of children's books writing. And so I just said to, and really at this point, like I knew nothing about the whole industry, but I said to myself, like, I have to contact a children's editor. Now, I actually have to back up a little bit and say it's not 100% true that I didn't know anything about the industry, because in my past life, I actually worked as a designer at a publishing house, but this was a long time ago. And I was sort of like, not really thinking about it, but so I do have a background as a designer. And that's how I thought to like, this was like 6 years previous. And I said, I should contact an editor from the publishing house where I worked. And let's see what, like, I'll just contact her. What will happen? And I did. And she wrote back like immediately and said, hi, Aura, I'm an agent now. And I'd be happy to look at your book. She was very excited about it.
Is this someone that you, because really... this is always, again, it's like, this is such a detailed point, but a lot of people, they don't really think about their network of contacts as like a resource they can dig into. And when they do, they stop themselves. They say, it was 6 years ago and I didn't really know her that well. And if I reach out to her, she's going to think that here I am trying to cut in line and I'm not really an author yet. And I don't know. And like, they have all these excuses to not do that simple thing. Did you have any of that when you were kind of going through the process of even sending that first email?
I'm sure I did, because that voice is very familiar. I second guess, you know, as everyone else, but I don't know. I wasn't in touch with her, but I had her email in my inbox. She was always very nice. So I thought, you know, like, I feel like my attitude a lot of times is like, okay, I'll send it. And like, so what? So like, she'll never answer. So like, nothing changed. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, okay, I might as well. And I at that point, I was like really believing in this idea. I was really excited about it. And so I just like wrote to her saying, do you have any idea? Like, can I pay you? Like, it wasn't like any, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know she was an agent. And it was really my only, like the only way I knew, like the only person I knew that I could write to about this. I didn't do any research at that point. I wasn't like part of SCBWI, like nothing. And yeah, I was lucky that I had her email and I just wrote to her personal email. And
Cool. So she asked to kind of take a look, and then what happened?
Right. So she was very nice and very helpful. She took a look. She sort of gave me a few pointers, and she also said, and please invite me to your book show. I'd love to see it. You know, the book show was sort of, like I said, the exhibit at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I kept working on it. I sort of tried to ask other people, and then then I felt like I need some more like expert help. And so then I started to really research people. I started listening like to more podcasts about children's books and really sort of give myself the education that I didn't feel like was getting at my program, which is, I mean, it's just, my program is just really not for children's books. So it was totally like, not there, you know. And that's when I contacted Emma Dryden, which I believe you had on your podcast.
Yeah, Emma's a friend.
The lovely Emma Dryden, who I just found through a podcast online. I don't even remember how I found her. And I sent her my manuscript, and she thought it was very interesting, but she had to think if she was willing to accept it, because she doesn't take everybody.
Yeah.
She doesn't, you know, she only takes someone if she thinks, I guess, like she can really help them. So I didn't hear from her for like a month, because, you know, my manuscript at that point, I sort of put a lot of research into it, but it wasn't really like that, you know, I don't know. It was very, very, still very, at the beginning stages. But then she got back to me. She said, this is a really interesting idea. Let's meet. And that one meeting, like, she sort of explained to me that this one pointer, I think, like, made the book. And she said, you know, you don't have to tell all of Gloria's life. Because I was really sort of doing, like, birth to, like, death kind of, not death. She's alive. Sorry. Yeah, well. But, like, whole arc of life. Sorry, Gloria.
Yeah.
She's amazing. I think she just turned 85 or is turning 85.
Well, it's interesting to hear that point, though, of, like, that's one of the many values of a collaborator is to reframe your mind. And I think a lot of people, I mean, so many writers and illustrators I talk to, they're terrified of a collaborator because this project is their one shot at having a voice. And then the idea of having someone else give input is like, well, then they're going to squash my voice like everyone else does. And I'm making up this person. So I think it's neat that you reached out to her, but then she had this piece of advice and you were so open to it where you're like, oh my gosh, that would make my idea even stronger.
Yeah. I mean, I felt with these getting these help is that I just really, like, I was sort of like absorbing, and as a student, I just sort of like really wanted to learn. And I think no one at any point said, like, write this, use this, write that. You know, people were sort of like, oh, you should include, you know, this, or, and just her just helping me saying, like, you know, your arc can be, you know, think of like an arc. What the ending will be much stronger if you know, choose a moment that's like more interesting. And the minute I did that, everything came together. And that was my book. And basically, that was basically the book that is published.
So you hired her and worked with her. What was the process beyond that to get it into being an actual book?
Right. Okay. So I had one.
The big sigh.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think. Like, so I had that one meeting with her. Then I went. I cocooned up. I made all the illustrations. I did the whole thing. It was like I made the book for the book show. And I invited my friend, the agent, to the show. And basically, from that show, she offered me representation. And that was after my first year at grad school. And I would go. But that's actually not how the book got published. So what happened was I submitted my manuscript, or my dummy, which included some illustrations, to a small SCBW conference that was taking sort of manuscripts, and you get to work one-on-one with an editor to sort of critique you, like, for 25 minutes, you know, a one-on-one type of thing. You send it ahead of time, and then you get, like, a review. So I did that. And this was, like, basically one of my first SCBWI events, and I was really excited. Now that I know how things work, like, this is, like, pretty, it was really amazing, because basically at that conference, the editor offered to acquire the book, basically. So it wasn't even with my agent. Like, I already had because I sent it before I had the agent.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was a really, you know, I was really lucky with that book because it was so, so timely. It was, like, right before the 2016 elections. And there were not a lot of books like this in the market. It was like a new thing, you know, for kids, like the biography. So I was really, it was just like the stars aligned, you know, it was like a really opportune moment at the right time, at the right place type of thing.
On a really practical level, and this might be too much detail, but this is where my brain goes, like the SCBWI, you're going to a conference, right? And there's like a million things to do. And then there's some, I assume they're buy-ups. So for $150, you get 25 minutes with an editor, like something like that?
So the way it worked, like, yeah, this was a really small one. And so it was just like everyone got it because there weren't a whole lot of, they were like, I think like 25 participants, maybe more, maybe 35, I don't know. And so like everyone was like, you're guaranteed as part of the price of the conference, you're guaranteed. Like you have to get accepted. Yeah, we had to send in our manuscripts. Once you get accepted, you're guaranteed like a 25-minute one-on-one with an editor, which is, as you know, like gold, right, in these type of things, like to get your manuscript critiqued like that and really reviewed by an editor. So, yeah.
Was there any part of you that was thinking, like, how did you even weigh going to that event? Because this is another one of those things where there's so many online things, offline things. I don't know if you had to travel for that. Like, even what was the like the pro and con list in your head of going to that event? Because it's another one of these things where I know so many people have been on the edge of that, and then they find an excuse not to because it's like, well, I've got to fly and I've got a family or whatever.
Right. I heard about it. Okay, so I heard about it from a friend, but what appealed to me was that it was so small. And like up in like, you know, like northern New York, like it just sounded like really beautiful. I really wanted to like show my book to someone. I liked that it was small. And I just thought like, I might as well try. The funny thing was, is that I was like really, really, really sick. I got really sick the day before I was in the emergency room.
Oh, God.
And basically the doctor told me like, don't travel. And I decided to go anyway. So the whole conference, I literally like had no voice.
Oh, wow.
Which is funny because I literally could not speak with anyone. It was kind of sad, but I got this amazing news there. So it was so like, everything was worth it. It was a really crazy story. Really. Yeah.
So at that point you have the publisher, you have the agent. From there until publication, what was that like, I guess, preparing the book and even going through launch, which is a exciting and terrifying time for any author.
Yeah. So then, it was acquired very quickly after that. And, you know, again, it was my first book. I really didn't know a lot. I still am learning so much about the whole publishing and launching. The publisher was very, very, was really helpful with the launch. They helped me organize the event. They also flew me out like a few weeks before to, like a big bookseller conference. I think it's the ABA. I'm not sure. And so they were really amazing with that. And printed posters and postcards. And this is a really interesting, cool story, is that I got to briefly meet Gloria Steinem because she was the keynote speaker at my graduation event, which was like this total weird coincidence.
Wow, that
like,
is an interesting coincidence.
It is so funny, yeah. So that was kind of cool. And so she knew about the book. Yeah, I mean, I part of me wishes that I did more of like a big social media launch around it. I really started learning about book launches only after, because it was so like fast and so new. I was very focused, you know, on the launch event itself, which, as you know, is sort of, you know, it was very nice and like friends turned out and like bought books, but it's not like a huge, you know, thing. A lot of, I know, like also from listening to you now for a while, there's a lot of marketing that goes into books, beyond that. So yeah, I'm learning now for my next books, hopefully.
So there's a point in here that this idea of, I had this great idea, I then developed it, I then met these people and they became collaborators who published a book. There feels like there's a point in here at which you go from, I was one thing and now I have this other thing, in terms of career, obviously, or creative direction. One, is that the case? And then two, like, was there a moment where that happened where you're like, yes, I am now an author illustrator, or I'm going to double down on it, or things are happening? Was there like a moment like that?
So you're asking about like when I decided that I wanted to be an illustrator or
Or when
when
it
like I
felt
started calling.
real, because it's like a lot of people will say like, well, I'm trying to write a novel or I'm trying to become an illustrator. And there can be this sort of wasteland of effort of all kinds of things. But was there a moment where you're like, oh my gosh, this is happening?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of moments like that. I think, even just getting accepted into like an illustration grad program that I was like a huge moment for me. And then getting an agent was like a huge moment for me. Then, having like a book deal, like every one of these moments really gave me the feeling that like it's real now, like that I can actually like own like the term illustrator, which was just so exhilarating to me. Before that, I was always drawing, and I was always an artist and I was always doing that kind of thing, but I never felt like I could call myself an illustrator. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. I guess because I know there's a whole debate about like, do you need education? Do you need someone to give you that stamp of approval? No, right? Like you could be a writer without that. You can be an artist without all that stuff. But I do feel that for me, having these sort of, yeah, I guess they're sort of like, the outside kind of validation, like was just really, really helpful. Yeah, to sort of step out of that like imposter syndrome. And I still like, sometimes feel like I don't know so much, and I'm still like every day I'm learning and growing and changing my style, and but I do feel like that I can say that with like I can say I'm an illustrator much with much more confidence now.
I mean, that's such a profound thing. It's something I think about a lot too, because I just observe so many creators, whether they're people I talk to or meet, or just watching YouTube videos with musicians and interviews with people, where I will say that what you just said is something that rings so true, and that a lot of people who are professional, whether it's hobby or profession, the difference between how they navigate imposter syndrome and how everyone else does is they're okay with the experimentation. They're willing to noodle with it and kind of get into that learner mindset again, even if they don't know what they're doing. I really like that. That's amazing. So the book comes out and you have the event. How was it getting, like, did you get any feedback from people? Like, was there a point where you're hearing from readers, whether it's at a reading or whether it's an Amazon review or anything else, where you then saw your work being extended? Like, people you don't know are reading it. They're finding it. It's moving them. Did you have any kind of discoveries in that process?
So one thing that was really cool was to see how like a global reach that it got. People posting like in New Zealand that they like really like my book, and obviously it's like English speaking countries, but like New Zealand and Australia and or England or just like these, which was sort of surprising to me because I always thought like Gloria was like a very like American centric, figure. And so it was really, really fun and nice to see that people were loving it there. And yeah, to be honest, I didn't like read any reviews on like Goodreads or Amazon. Like I just like put that aside, and I, kind of to protect myself, I guess, if someone, I'm sure that not everyone like, loves it in the same way or, so I decided to just not go down that, but when people post it on Instagram, and share it or do, like people post with it sometimes because the cover is sort of a big close up of Gloria's face, so it lends itself to like cute photos of people. So that was just like really, really fun to see.
Nice. Yeah, it's a good point too about picking the channels at which you're going to engage and really smartly figuring out where your boundaries are, which I think is so critical for people.
Totally.
Okay, so then, and you mentioned this earlier. So then you do this thing that is both exciting and, again, like, it's just a lot of things, like, terrifying. So you come up with, but the second book, it's totally different. You don't say the thing of, like, got this one, you know, illustrated children's book. Now I'm going to do another one, and I'm going to use the same format and the same everything, and I'll pick a different person. You write a book that's geared towards adults. What was that decision-making process like?
Okay, so my second book was also part of my master's program. And so we had to, like, think of a project for our thesis, basically. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I, you know, this thesis is sort of like this huge thing that, like, was looming over your head. And you sort of have to, like, find something that you can, like, work on for a year and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, nothing like felt like quite like that it clicked. I had like different ideas. It was like one thing I was almost going to do. And I just like, I already had like an advisor and I had this sort of one idea that I started working on also about women, but like, I don't know. And I kind of really wanted to do a book, but I wasn't sure. And I suddenly had this idea. This was back in 2017. And it started by me like being interested in like drawing fashion from different decades, like really simple like that. Like it wasn't even, and then it just sort of dawned on me that 2020 is the 100th anniversary and like 2017 is like the perfect time to like pitch a book for like 3 years from now, you know, how like everything is so slow. I just like the idea just sort of like was fully formed like to do this book about decade by decade, from 1920 to 2020. So it's like 10 chapters in the book, 10 moments or people or events, books, something, 10 things from every decade that were part of the women's movement or American feminist history. And I mean, it's a huge project, but I said, okay, for my thesis is going to be a book proposal. Like it just sort of like, it just came to me and I, yeah. When that idea happened, I was like so excited. And what was so cool about this idea is that it really also gave me an opportunity, you know, for my project, like the illustration wise, to just do such a big variety because, you know, I sort of could curate it any way I wanted. So I chose, you know, some people, but a lot of it is just like interesting events or laws that were passed, books that were written. So just sort of like, and I try to, of course, make it like diverse and different things. So, and I don't know, I felt like this should be for adults. I think like it was very sort of natural and intuitive. Like I wasn't like very calculated. Like I made a book for children. Now I'm going to make a book for adults or like I should continue this. But I was just like the idea, that was the idea. And I think also like, I really enjoy like the research and writing also like for the adults or like for the young adults, kind of like, I just really like that voice too. And so I didn't want to like early on box myself already as like a children's bookmaker, because also a lot of my illustrations are a little bit more like editorial or sophisticated, still like playful, but not necessarily only for children. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought at first I should be a children's book illustrator, you know, like, but, and I was really trying hard to sort of fit in that, like, but I don't so much draw like, you know, like that. And so a lot of, you know, I just sort of let the subject matter dictate who the audience was going to be.
Well, it's neat too to see. It does, because what I'm seeing in the process too is someone who is aware of the market and the idea of like doing a thesis that would become a book proposal is a neat way of marrying those two things. But then also someone who is kind of not being like, you know, blown by the market in a certain direction either. You're saying, well, yeah, I mean, I draw, I'm an illustrator. So clearly there's a lot of uses for that for things with kids, but you know, I don't want it to be just that. So you're preparing this next book. Does it go same agent, same publisher? Is it something totally different? How did you find it to really place in the market?
Yeah, so My agent was really a children's editor, and she said, you know, no, I was wondering if I should find a different, you know, I wasn't sure what to do. So she said, no, I think I can sell it to like YA as YA. So she submitted it broadly, and it was really interesting, actually. I did get 6 offers for it, but one of the publishers said, you know, we really like this, but we think that it will be better on our adult list. And that was a different publisher than my Gloria Steinem book. And I decided I really liked their approach. Yeah. And I liked that it was an adult book because it also gave me more leeway to write about some topics that would not necessarily be appropriate for children's books. You know, for example, I talk about topics like abortion and birth control, or, you know, things that, you know, might have been edited out of the children's books. And which I found important to the women's movement in the United States.
So, it's funny, there's something in there so much that just reminds me that the publishing process is a part of the creative process. Like, you have this book, you think it's for adults, you need to collaborate with your agent. They're like, well, maybe it's YA, we'll put it out there that way. You're like, that sounds good. You do that, you get great feedback from the market, but then one publisher says, hey, how about adult? And then you evolve back to that. And I just love the idea that so many writers and illustrators, they separate it out. It's like, I'm doing the writing. Then there's like a big, thick line. Now I'm doing the publishing. And then now I'm going to do marketing. And that's not how it works. And I just love how this story illustrates how all of this is a part of your individual creative process and how you collaborate with people in that. So that's just so cool to hear.
Thank you.
So you signed that deal, you got the publisher. Was it very different bringing that book to market than the first book, or was it just the same but maybe bigger, something like that?
Yeah. So, I mentioned before, this book was only about a third done. And so I had a ton of work I needed to do to make it ready. And I just finished working on it, actually. And the last few months were sort of just like crazy, you know, finishing everything, making corrections, working with the art team, you know, putting it all together. We had to like fact check a lot of it, make sure everything is accurate, and yeah, it's just a much bigger scale, and the thing is that it's just a different project. You know, it's a 100 different moments. So everyone also is like a little bit of a standalone piece. So of course it's like a, you know, one whole book. So I constantly like cross reference things, and you know, so just like the footnotes is a whole thing. It was like a really big endeavor, and yeah, to be honest, a little bit of you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a little bit intimidating because, you know, I'm not a historian. I tell myself that like I'm hopeful that, you know, my one of my big points was to make American feminism and American feminist history like accessible and down to earth, and not this like very theoretic and academic kind of a thing. And so maybe it's okay that it's coming from a voice of a person that's not, you know, a feminist historian or whatever. So yeah, so I'm really excited about it. It's coming out in March, I think, early March. And
Are you approaching the launch differently than you approached the last book launch? You know, you'd mentioned the idea of social media and stuff, but are you looking at that process differently, or are you also waiting and seeing because there's a different publisher and you're kind of collaborating with them differently?
Right. So it's exactly. I'm still waiting to hear from the publisher about how they want to market it. I would like to do a few more things with like the pre-order. It's already available for pre-order, and so I'm sort of like figuring that out now. Also, it's a little different because I no longer live in the United States. And so even though I am planning to visit often, you know, my first book, I was living in Manhattan. And so my book launches in Manhattan, and I went to do a few readings in like the wonderful local indie bookshops in New York City. And I'm no longer there. So I am not sure what it's going to look like. But like I said, I don't know that like one big launch, you know, party is necessarily that really, really important for the marketing of it. So yeah, I'm figuring it out. I have to say I'm not great at social media. And so I have a lot of homework to do. The thing is that I'm thankfully very busy working on a lot of books right now. And so, it's like a really it's an interesting juggling of like marketing one book, but then like working on like different stages of other books at the same time.
I want to talk about other books, but I do want to pause in the social media piece first. And this is something, I mean, everyone tries to manage this. So I'm curious of your approach, especially because you have this amazing skill of illustration, where how do you look at that opportunity or problem, perhaps, of being public with that, of sharing your work, your creative process, different sides of yourself even? How have you even tried to navigate that? Because a lot of people, and you've probably heard this in the podcast, is there's a real complexity to it about what you share, how often you share, how much you put yourself out there, all kinds of stuff with comparisonitis and that sort of thing. I'm just curious of how you've looked at that, because I think it's something that the more we address it, the more it encourages other people to think through it.
Yeah, those are really good questions. I have this like I have a mission to like put myself out there more. I am like very, very private, and you know, I guess like classic introvert. I really is online as well. I sort of, if you look at my Instagram feed, I do share a lot of illustrations, and I see it as a way to like sort of, you know, share what I'm working on, or sort of, you know, post about like some sort of event that's like currently happening, but there's almost no personal photos. And so I'm trying more and more, like, even if it's an illustration, to say something more that's personal about like me, or share more of like what I'm doing. And I think that's really important, to sort of put myself out there as an artist as well. And so I know the importance of it, and I'm, it takes a lot of courage to do that. I really admire people who do that. And it's something that I'm working on. What else was your question? Oh, the comparisonitis. Yeah, I totally do compare, like I suffer from comparisonitis. And so that's why like I just don't love social media, to be honest. Like, it distracts me, and it you know, as a full-time illustrator, as a mom, as a, you know, I do a lot of things. I really have like, I really feel like I need to protect my energy. And so yeah, social media is like, could be like really draining for me. And so although I really recognize its value in marketing and in creating, you know, yourself I have to say brand, you know, I know that it's really important.
Well, it's a funny thing, why I like pausing so much on the idea of like going to a CBWI event and meeting the editor and emailing the editor who actually ended up being an agent, is like, it is such a difficult thing, because it's not just, hey, being out there is great, because it really is so much. And there are examples from your story where you connecting with someone or showing up was really serendipitous. It was really the right, you know, your passion, your vision, your project with the right person, the right moment, but you also don't know. And it's clearly for everyone very complex to put yourself out there, so to know how to do it and what you should do, and then the whole thing, like, you know, you're saying before, of just the distraction of it. It's so complicated, and I think that's why it's such an interesting topic. It's not just one or the other, and And I think, as I said before too, it's not just marketing or not. It's so much of the in between as well, which I think is what's interesting about it. Okay, so you have these two books.
Yeah.
Where on earth does a book, six additional book deals, where does that come from? How did that happen?
I don't know. It's like, so after my second book was acquired, I sort of had like a year where like I didn't get anything in terms of books. Like I, you know, got different like illustration projects, but like no books.
Are you like putting pitches out there? Are you like, is that a year where you're trying and nothing's really coming through?
Yes, I am at this point, like, thinking of ideas, putting some pitches together, you know, different, thinking of different concepts, and nothing is really sticking. We get some, like, sort of interest and not, and in the middle, my agent had to, like, leave, so I got a new agent.
Oh, wow.
So there were a few different things going on, yeah. And then, you know, personal life things. But, you know, after a year where nothing happens, and I, because I had like two books happen like really quickly, I was like, oh, you know, I mean, I knew that it was like, it could take a long time. And like, the more you know, the more I knew like how hard it is to, it's hard to get published and, you know, for a book to be picked up. And so, but I was sort of like getting discouraged. And then I got an offer to illustrate a book. So this was my first project of just like illustrating. So it wasn't a text that I wrote. It was illustrating a book. And so that was very, very exciting. That was like it took a while. So it was like a whole year later. And I really got this through my agency. So I have to say that like, I give a lot of credit to my agent, to like, you know, putting my work out there. And so I know a lot of people don't have agents, and I don't think you necessarily need an agent, or maybe, I don't know. I know that for me, it's so helpful.
What yeah. I like about it too, though, is like, and I said it this way on purpose at the beginning of like, you know, it's like, oh, I got six book deals. Like it seems so linear. I went to grad school, got a book deal, got a second book deal, got six more. It feels so linear. And what I like about slowing it down is right. How even here, you did a children's illustrated book, then you did an adult illustrated book, and now you're being, for a book, just the illustrator. And I can see someone wrestling over that decision of, oh, but I want to write or whatever it is. So I just think it's neat of how this unfolds for you. You put a lot of stuff out there and you sort of have to kind of keep evolving with what you want to create too.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And I am... Yeah, I mean, at this point in my career, I'm also really happy to illustrate for other people. It's just a really kind of a different challenge, you know. But it's a totally different thing after doing like, you know, being like the sole creator of a book and then collaborating with someone else. It's very different, for sure.
So was that one deal or was it six deals all in one? How did you go from now that third thing to like so many?
Well, I don't know. I mean, every book is totally different. The book after that was acquired is a book that I also am writing. And that is for like, I guess you'd say like 10 to 12 year olds, I guess middle grade ages. So the interesting thing is that almost all of my books are nonfiction. So that was my fourth book. I don't know if you want me to go through all the books.
Yeah,
but
I'm really excited about.
So I'm really excited about that book. That's going to be a collection about sisters throughout history. So really excited about that. Then I got two more offers to illustrate for other people, for really cool books that I'm excited about. And then two. My most recent book, which is super, super exciting, and I can't really announce yet because we're still like waiting for all kinds of things to happen. But what's cool about it is that it's a real collaboration with a friend of mine. So we sort of had a concept and are sort of like writing it together. I'm illustrating it, but we're sort of like, we like the whole, you know, concepting it together. And that has recently been acquired. And so that's like super, super exciting. Yeah. So every book is like a little bit like different because, you know, different age groups, different kinds of collaborations.
I mean, that's neat too, again, because it makes that point of you have to, opportunity comes and you evolve what you do. It's also neat too, because I'll hear from a lot of people who say, well, you know, Dan, as you know, what's hot in the market right now is X, or I've heard X is hot in the market, so I'm going to evolve my thing. Like, this impression that there's one thing that is popular in the market, or that you should evolve to that. And I just love this idea that here you are trying so many things. The things that are coming to fruition for you are all over the map in terms, I mean, there's that real core, which is your style, your voice, the fact it's nonfiction. So there's definitely, without question, a foundation. But in terms of how it comes into the marketplace, all different ages, all different types of collaboration, whether you're writing it or you're writing it, collaborating with someone, you're illustrating for someone else.
Right.
It's so neat to just kind of see that.
Thank you. It's very exciting. It's also like, you know how with books, it's also scary because I never know, you know, there's never like, no one ever promises you like another book. So, yeah. It's always just like, very emotional, the whole publishing business.
So how do you juggle all of that? Because it sounds like so many projects, and of course I'm sure it's staggered in some way, but how do you manage either your time or your focus when there's so much that you've got this one book coming out in March, and then there's just, you know, the eighth book you mentioned is the one you also just said, oh, I'm so excited, I'm collaborating. But then in between that are like four or five other books. How do you manage all of that?
I like you said, they're sort of staggered. So some of them I'm working simultaneously. So I just like, I really sort of like divide my week and work like to deadlines. So, you know, just really try to focus on like what I need to do next. I'm not like a very good like chart maker planner that way. I just sort of like, you know, see my calendar, see, just plug in, you know. I learned to manage my time much better after being a mom, which I know a lot of people say, but it's really, really true. Like once, you know, you have to like time manage. So I try to not do anything in the mornings when I work best, and I just, but I have.
Wait, just so I understand that you're saying you try to, you do your creative work best in the morning, so you try to keep that free?
Right. Exactly. So I learned over many, you know, years and trial and error that I work best, you know, in certain times of the day. So I heard of a concept called, in terms of, in addition to time management, a really useful concept called mind management, which I'm really sorry, but I don't remember who said this, who made this, coined this term, but I really identify with that of sort of knowing when, you know, when you work best and really focusing all your creative energy to those hours, and then delegating like all the lighter or work that doesn't need as much of your attention to times when you're less focused. So I do a lot of like less focused work at night after the kids go to sleep. I have another, you know, few hours when I work, and that's when I do, you know, I don't write at night, for example. Like if I'm doing writing and research, it's like in the morning, or like a very complicated illustration, it's in the morning. If I just need to like color something, I can do that at night. That's just an example of something. Even though I have to say that with my last book with the Illustrated Feminist, like I had to work many nights late, and then you just have to do what you have to do. You know, like you have to write at night, you write at night.
How do you find a way? Because I talk to so many creative people about this. The morning, like I'm a morning creator as well, and I think everyone who does this ends up with their own tactics, but the morning, the world can be screaming at you in so many different ways. whether it's people who need things or you just wanting to like, oh, let me get the house clean or let me go call that lawyer for that thing, whatever it is. Are there specific ways that you've protected that time for yourself? And one, to control anyone or anything outside of yourself, but even internally, so that when you wake up and you have all this stuff in your life that's maybe screaming at you, you've said, I'm going to work on this right now.
Well, I wish like I could like wake up and start working, but that's not the case. So there's a few hours there that I know that like, even though it's like my best time, you know, like maybe from like, you know, 6 to 9 would be my ideal. Like I would just like do it. I have to get my kids off to school, et cetera. But like, if I can like get like high quality work done from like, let's say like 9 to 2. And of course, like I take a break. I take breaks or whatever, but I try to like do as much as I can then. So what I try to do is I give myself very, very specific tasks of what to do. So like, I used to be that I would just come and just sort of like, okay, what am I doing now? And that just, that would take a lot of time and mental energy. And that would be like draining, and then I wouldn't get stuff done. So if I know, like, I, like very specific tasks, like now I'm doing this, and then at the next hour I'm doing this, and you know, breaking up my schedule like that has been like super helpful. And so that I do plan, like try to even plan like the day before. And then if an item doesn't get done one day, I'll just move it to the other day. You know what I mean? And that's been like really, really helpful to me to sort of know what I'm gonna do. It takes a lot of like all the mental guesswork. So I think that's been really helpful. And to say like to make any social engagements or appointments after like 2, if I need to squeeze them during the day, if I can't do them at night. After lunch, you know, my everything goes, my energy is lower. So I really try to stick to that. It doesn't always work, obviously. Some mornings I just like don't, I can't work. But that's on the whole how I manage my time.
Is there anything I haven't asked about that you thought we should talk about? I had to cover a lot in terms of how you got here, at least until grad school, if it's from grad school, but what, is there anything that we missed that we should dig into?
I feel like I can, you know, talk about like the creative process and all of that for a long time. But so, yeah, I think that we can say that for another time, but, I just maybe finish with saying that for me, like this whole process of like becoming an illustrator and making books was really came from like when I was able to really trust my intuition and like that this was right for me, because I had a whole past life doing other things, which we didn't really talk about. And so
We can talk about that a little bit though, because that is a big, if you have a little bit of time for it.
Sure. Yeah.
Because that this whole podcast is called The Creative Shift, and it's very much to me about the choices that we make. And that's where I've tried to pause at every point, be like, wait, back up. You emailed someone and I'm like, tell me about that email. But that kind of shift from, hey, I was doing this to I was doing that is a really... it's a profound thing. What's the way into that conversation of maybe how would you characterize what you were doing before this?
So I'll just say that I went to grad school to become an illustrator when I was, I think, 32. So there were about like 10 years after my undergrad that I wasn't an illustrator and I wasn't making books. I'll just make it a very short, very quick, story, but I was almost going to become a therapist and made a sharp turn when I decided like I want to be all creative field. And so I became a graphic designer And so I worked as a graphic designer for a long time, for about seven years. I still do design, which has been a huge, huge help in me making books, because I understand a lot of like how to actually, like, how they are actually made in terms of like the design process. But it wasn't my happy, like it wasn't really aligned with what I wanted to do. And so it took me a while and a lot of different experimentations. And when I realized like I want to do illustration,
so how is
that was a huge, huge shift. Yeah.
Cause I'm trying to imagine someone who's 5, 6, 7 years into a creative field, which is what design is. And maybe there's something inside you saying, oh, gosh, I don't know if this is right. But there's that other part in one's head. I don't know, you know, you could tell me about what you were deciding with that, which is sort of where we compromise a little bit. We say, hey, you put in 6, 7 years into this, like, keep going. Like, don't start over, because you're going to lose whatever you've attained. And the other thing is, hey, you got a lot of stuff going on in life. Just don't rock the boat. You know, you're earning better than you did 5 years ago, and 5 years to earn more. Or even the thing of saying, like, you know, hey, why are you being selfish? Like, you know, so what, you're not creatively fulfilled, it's still a creative field, there's still good things about it. And I'm making all this up, I'm not saying any of that was from you, but did you have thought processes like that as you decided to say, again, 7 years into a profession, which is phenomenal and a great field, to say, now I'm going to spend money to take time off to go to school, which is a huge decision.
Right. Yeah. And just to add to your list of things, is there's also like your environment and your, you know, family and friends who are, you know, saying like, now you're going to make a career change, right? You're gonna, like you're saying, you're going to invest all this money, and like, why, what, you know?
So yeah, is that what happened? Because I'm making assumptions, but I have no idea.
Yes. Well, what happened was my husband and I had this amazing opportunity to live in Argentina for a few years. My husband had to do research there in Argentina, and so I was able to quit my job, my graphic design job, and sort of take a little bit of time off. And I was continuing to work as a freelancer, but I also had more time. And I decided that I really want to like take this time and explore and make art. And I just took that year to paint, basically.
Oh, wow.
And it was incredible. And it was just like such an amazing time for me to have that, you know, no work commitment really. And for a long time, I was feeling like design was not exactly like aligned, or not exactly what I want to be doing. It wasn't. I wanted to be creating content. I really wanted to be more of the making the things and not just designing the things. And so, but I didn't know what that meant really. And it was really scary, because people were expecting me to, you know, continue with the design. I was sort of, because the design was already a shift, right? I have made already a shift.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah. And so because I was like almost going to do the grad school in psychology, et cetera, et cetera. And so for me to say, you know what, like hold everything, I want to go back to grad school and do this other thing. So it wasn't completely out of the blue. You know, people knew that I'm an art, you know, I was painting, I was drawing. It wasn't like I'm going to become an astronaut, you know, astronaut.
Yeah.
But it was sort of like going back. Like the way I see it is like really going back to the core of what I always loved doing as a child is forever. When I had that moment of, it really was a moment of clarity of me realizing like, I want to be an illustrator. I just sort of like, it felt really right. And I got my husband on board. Yeah, it's like I'm saying it now, like da da da. But it was a big, big thing, because it was, you know, again, going back to grad school, the expense of it. I had just had a baby. There were a lot of things, but I like it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. Like, yeah, I love what I do now, and I am so, so, so happy doing what I'm doing. And it was really, it really came out of the process of like trusting my intuition and like the voice saying, you know, like, do this, you know? So yeah, I'm fast forwarding the process a little bit, but that is the essence of it.
No, I love that so much. It's so inspiring. And I think because it also aligns to this bigger narrative, and I see, which is like, you have to make these choices that are right for you. And that it's possible, it's not easy. So thinking about, well, gee, what was the conversation like with the spouse, or what did the friends say that got to you, or, you know, you're in a new country, or whatever it is, like all of those things are nights, days, months of process. But that bigger picture of saying, you know, I wanted to go somewhere and I went through it and now I'm there and it's a wonderful thing. It's just so inspiring. I love that.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks so much for digging into all this. It really means a lot. There's so much in your story of what you've shared here that I feel like so many other writers and illustrators really, you know, really have a hard time navigating. I think we all do, every single creator. And when we kind of hear this journey and your honesty around it, I genuinely think it helps. And like I said before, it's so inspiring.
Thank you so, so much for asking me all these questions and talking to me about this. It's really great to, to revisit all these moments and talk about it. So thank you.
You can find Aura at auralewis.com. That is AuraLewis. And on Instagram at Aura Lewis. You can find her books, of course, wherever books are sold. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me on my website, wegrowmedia.com, or on social media at Dan Blank. Thank you so much for listening until the end.